Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, is Danny King, writer for the Film Stage.
Hello.
And a special guest today, taking the place of Nick Newman, who could not be here, our editor-in-chief, Il Duce, it's Jordan Rao.
Hello.
Hello. For anyone just joining us, we are a movie review podcast. We will talk about a new release. We will also be giving you a brief movie discussion before that. And after all of that, we will be giving you our picks of movies coming to DVD and Blu-ray in the week ahead. So look forward to that. Here's the thing. For about a year now, I've teased that I will not go see the second Hobbit film unless given a directive by the editor-in-chief of the website. So, what a joy it is. Here we are, 1 week out from the release of The Desolation of Smaug.
Smaug.
To have Jordan Rao here.
Yes.
So, Jordan, why don't we settle this right now?
Oh, man, on air?
On air. I would like to know, would you like us to go see and then review on this podcast The Desolation of Smaug?
Well,
this is going to set a tone for the entire rest of the podcast.
I would obviously not force you guys, but
right. But
it's either that or Tyler Perry's A Medea Christmas. So, yeah. No.
the Tyler Perry movie sounds fine. Yeah, if that was your point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I got an invite to see Desolation of Smaug, and I declined it. And so I would expect you guys to do the same. So I can't be mad if you don't go see it. Something that, I mean, obviously there's other films that are much, much more worth talking about. So I will say, no, you guys do not have to go see it.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
I'd rather you pick something, you know, that's maybe a little more interesting, which we can talk about.
Well, hopefully Inside Llewyn Davis gets wide enough before...
Unfortunately, it won't.
It won't, so it's not even, like, expanding a little bit?
It's opening in 4 theaters this weekend, then on December 20th, it's going to be opening wide, not December
15th. So it's not even like a slow rollout?
I don't know. Not
what my life is terrible.
Okay. Well, it's kind of better because then it goes like wide on the 20th, I think. So.
Yeah, but usually I can at least look forward to seeing it before like most of the country, if not New York and L.A.
Yeah.
We'll Washington. Well, Washington is the weird nephew of the movie scene. I just don't understand it. Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. As long as we can find something else to talk about, we will not have to talk about the
Desolation. If you have any suggestions, email them to us by Friday, I guess.
Yes, at podcast@thefilmstage.com. Alternately, if you'd really like us to watch The Desolation of Smaug, I guess you could tell us that as well. Again, podcast@thefilmstage.com, or comment on this episode on thefilmstage.com. So that's that, now that we've gotten that out of the way, now that we've thrown the gauntlet down. Let's talk about some random stuff. Usually we talk about lots of different kinds of film news, anything related to the movie we're about to watch. Today there was nothing that really struck us in particular, so it's going to be kind of a grab bag. I guess just to prove that we are a movie website that follows the news, we should say that Disney purchased the rights to all future Indiana Jones films, so we can look forward to some kind of desecration of the Indiana Jones franchise above and beyond.
J.J. Abrams Crystal directing Shia LaBeouf. That's what I want to see.
God damn.
Just kidding. Paramount actually got a sweet deal out of that because they don't have to do anything, and they're making money off any future one. So,
do they still Paramount. Does the mountain still appear in the...
No, it won't.
Oh, what the hell?
I don't think, unless... I don't know. I don't think so. Because when they did the Marvel deal, it was like one movie it did, and then it went away, so.
Wow, that's crazy. Okay. Yeah. Well, so that's, we could go on for hours about, please stop making Indiana Jones films, leave well enough alone. But I mean, Disney ain't going to spend money unless it's looking to make money, so look exactly. Forward to that.
It's happening.
Yeah. On a happy note, though, I saw Frozen this week. the newest Disney film. And I remember seeing the trailers and posters for this movie and thinking that it looked pretty much god-awful. So imagine my sweet surprise when people started saying how good it was. And then I was like, you know what? I don't trust the man. I gotta make sure for myself. And yeah, it's a fantastic movie. And people always give me a weird look when I say that, but it's quite wonderful.
I'm giving you a weird look right now.
I figured you would.
I could kind of tell. I mean, like most of the trailers for these kid movies, like I don't remember the Tangled trailer being that great, right?
I don't remember the Tangled trailer that much. I do remember loving Tangled though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's,
yes. So
they got to market to what you know what's going to bring in the money.
Yeah, I think my real concern was the snowman Olaf.
Yeah,
because he kind of struck me as that. That particular kind of sidekick that I find insufferable. But he was actually adorable and heartwarming and hilarious.
I heard, can you answer a question for me? I heard that they like copy a few Arrested Development jokes.
There are some Arrested Development jokes.
That's so weird. more than one. Like, I don't get.
I was blown away.
That's crazy. I still want to see it. But
yeah. And the jokes work in context, so it's not like Shrek where they're just like.
But it's not even like a nod to it, right? They're clearly. Yeah,
it's just that joke.
Yeah.
It's just like, whoa, that's awesome.
Hey, I guess they're hoping that there's no crossover demographic, right? Between Arrested Development fans and.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I thought that it was just like these people were Arrested Development fans and like. the thing about some of Arrested Development jokes is that they will translate outside of Arrested Development, but they're still clearly an Arrested Development joke. So unlike Shrek, where they'd say something. That was like pop culture specific and you had to know the pop culture property to get it. Using the Arrested Development joke could be like a dual sided, like an inside joke on top of just being an actual joke.
This movie is just deep.
This has layers.
Yes.
It does. There's a song that they sing that I can totally see becoming in the future, like the rallying call of, what was I going to say? The rallying call of like,
Snowman.
Yes. Well, that too. No, there's a song that you can see becoming the rallying call of closeted homosexuality.
Oh,
and, like a call to come out. When you see it in the movie, like some of the animation that goes along with it, yeah, it definitely seems like it's an empowerment song for not only that, but just anyone who's societally repressed. Mm-hmm. It's a very good song. The Snowman has a wonderful song about how much he's looking forward to summer.
That's funny.
Yeah, and yeah, it's all in all, the animation's the same style as Tangled.
Cool.
Which I like. I still kind of miss the hand-drawn. And
We're never going to go back to that, Brian. Let it go.
But, you know, yeah, I guess. So, the one vague complaint I might have about it is that there's sometimes when the animation in the background doesn't match the level of detail of the animation in the foreground. And I'm sure that was a stylistic choice to kind of give it like a storybook quality, but I just, you know, it just didn't work for me.
And Joe? Oh,
well. But all in all, I give this movie like an A+.
Wow.
That's a pretty high grade.
That is remarkably high.
I have been humming all of the songs to myself for the past like 4 days. So.
So wait, are we talking like top 10 good? You liked it?
Of all time.
I don't know.
No, like.
Of the year?
Yeah.
This has been a surprisingly strong year.
That's true.
So I don't think it will make the top 10. I wouldn't be surprised if it did make someone's top 10. Now, if it had been brought out last year, this would definitely be towards the top.
There it is.
Because you know what? Screw last year. So yeah, Frozen. Frozen. Check it out. It's really, really, really good. If you have children, I would say take them to it.
Even if you don't have kids, just grab some kids and take them.
Just grab a kid. Guys, there are kids everywhere. You can find a kid to take to this. You will be making their day. Don't even tell their parents.
Exactly.
So that's that. Yeah. So what else are we going to talk about?
Well, I could bring up something exciting that's happening this weekend.
Mr. Ralph would like to talk to us about.
If you listen to this podcast or follow us on Twitter or on our website, you probably heard that in a few hours, but by the time you listen to this, it will be a few days ago, probably. There will be a screening of The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And if anyone hasn't seen that movie, go watch it. But actually, if you haven't seen it, maybe hold off a little bit because there's exciting developments. So pretty much backstory of this is you know, all the time in New York City and LA, mostly, and in some other cities, there's like revival or repertory screenings of films, and they kind of come and go. Usually it's like a one-off, rarely, maybe a talent from the movie is there. And so my friend Jameson, who has been working on this for about 2 years, he's a massive fan of the movie. And as some might know, this is a movie that Andrew Dominik directed, who also did Killing Them Softly, which I think you guys talked about on the podcast, yes, maybe. And it's a 2007 Western, and it got pretty favorably reviewed when it came out, but it kind of got lost in the shuffle. That was the epic year of like There Will Be Blood, No Country for Old Men, all these like fantastic movies. And so this one, being a 160-minute Western that, you know, kind of methodically paced, but just gorgeous. Anyways, it only did, I think, about like a little over $3 million at the domestic box office, so kind of didn't get its due. And so it's kind of went on to get some recognition it deserves just on the, you know, cinephile circuit, I guess you could say. People have been like clamoring for like Criterion to release this movie. Anyways, so my friend Jameson has been organizing behind the scenes for like the last, I would say, year and a half to get this to come. He actually owns a film print he acquired of it. Like, it's crazy.
Really?
And and he has it like himself. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And anyway, so he needed some websites to get on board to get this to happen. And so we were one of the first websites, along with HitFix and Christopher Tapley, who runs a great blog in contention over at HitFix. We got on board, and that was the step to get Andrew Dominik, once he saw these sites, were actually interested in the movie. Because to him, this was just kind of like a failure a little bit. I mean, he loves the movie dearly, but he wanted to know if there was people out there that would want to see it. Anyway, so it's happening this weekend. We're starting. It's not just going to be a one-off screening. We're calling it like the Jesse James Revival. And the goal is to get theaters across the country, theaters like, you know, not Regal, but a theater that might play a film like this, and have it kind of tour the country. And so if you're interested, just search on our website. There's tons of links. Look at any Jesse James article in the past week, and there's links, or you can follow Jesse James REV on Twitter. And if you're interested at all, Jameson is keeping a master list of everyone that ever says that they would want to see it in their city. And I mean, we've seen things like Tug do this, but this is kind of more, you know, just solely fan oriented and a little more organized. And we've, you know, we're actually in talks with WB about this and talking with Andrew Dominik, and Andrew Dominik probably won't, he's coming to New York City for this, but he probably won't be coming elsewhere, but he will. But if you want to see the film in your town, definitely get in touch with us, follow, like on Facebook and follow on Twitter. And yeah, it's just really exciting. There's also like some pretty big plans in the works that I can't really say yet, but yeah, I would say if you're interested at all in a director's cut of the film, which has been talked about a lot, I would say, comment on our post with our interview with Andrew Dominik where he talks about it, because we're kind of gathering mentions and seeing where it could go, because let's just say interest is being gauged for that. So,
well, that is 100% awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really exciting, and it's one of the first times, I think, if ever, that a fan has kind of organized all this and from the ground up, and kind of been behind the scenes, and we're just really, really thrilled to be part of it. So even if it's a very small hand, we're excited that we're kind of one of the sites that's making this happen. So, yeah, if you're in New York City, by the time you listen to this, you already missed it, but you've been following us on Twitter anyways, so you know, and you should have got tickets. So, yeah. So I'm really excited. It's going to be at Museum of Moving Image tonight. And, yeah, that's all right.
Well, that is awesome, and I'm insanely jealous. But hopefully one day I can get it to come to Washington, D.C.,
Yeah, there's already been interest there, so...
Excellent.
Yeah.
I was worried, because we're such a company town, I just don't... I don't know if we have, like, a huge art scene that would be looking to see that.
Yeah.
We got a lot of smart people here, but not a lot of cultured ones. That's right, DC, I'm calling you out.
Oh, no.
All right, Danny, did you have anything that you wanted to throw up before we got into our primary review, or...?
Yeah, I mean, well, just one quick thing is that I know... In Nick's interview with Andrew Dominik, there's this really funny section where Nick mentions, like, have you been in contact with people at the Moving Image or whatever? And Andrew Dominik's kind of just like, wait, what, like, really is the Museum of the Moving Image? And this is like a week or two before the event. So he basically just asked Nick Newman to like explain the location of the event. And Nick has this like really funny response where he's like, well, it is indeed a place where like films are screened, especially those related to like film history. And like Dominik's just like, oh, cool. Like, that sounds good.
He's a very busy man.
I'm sure he is.
Next movie,
so. And that's actually one of the reasons it's so funny is because it's like, it seems like something that's so like would happen to almost anyone. Like, they'd be too busy to like plan something like this or, be completely prepared for it. But
he's in Australia.
He's cool.
I wouldn't know any Australian theaters, so sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I know them all. They're really good theaters, yeah. But then just the other interesting thing about the event is just like how quick the turnaround has been since the theatrical release, and it's a really cool thing. And I know like the obvious comparison point right now, just in terms of kind of like discarded Westerns, would be Heaven's Gate, which took like a full like 3 decades to kind of get its public revival last year with a New York Film Festival screening, and then this year with a theatrical release restoration. So, I mean, for this film to sort of get that process done within 6 years is kind of like, I think in some ways it's the result of the internet. I mean, as you said, like Jameson has sort of relied on like internet critics and writers to sort of spread word, and it'll be interesting to see if this is like replicated for other films. Because I mean, even things like The Counselor, like the day after they're released, people are like, all right, you know, there are a few critics that might like this film, but it's not making any money. So it's like people feel a responsibility to like try to revive it almost instantly.
That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna revive The Counselor.
Revive it a month later. No,
it's going to be incredible.
I had a few people questioning like why this movie, why is it getting so much buzz? Like, you know, this stuff kind of happens all the time, and I kind of explained what our ultimate goals are. But I'm honestly trying to think of like, I know, I mean, obviously there's a million movies that this could happen with, but it was hard to find an example where like the director is still alive, semi interested in like talking about it. The distributor's still very much active, you know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like a perfect
And it kind of like, the movie kind of like demands the big screen.
About to say, no, I just kind of get it innately, but I can understand how people would have questions about that.
Also honestly, like, Jameson has done like 99% of the legwork and like devotes his entire free time to doing this, so if there's not someone like him behind the sort of revival of any other movie, it would clearly not happen. So all praise goes to him for this.
All praise to Jameson.
Yes, he's our overlord.
Frightening. I'm just surprised. Like, how do you get your hands on a print copy of a film?
I don't know the backstory. Actually, I'll have to ask him. Maybe he'll talk about it. He's going to introduce the movie. So I think he was talking with Warner's, the repertory arm of Warner's. So I think Yeah, it took a while to get them kind of like, we wanted like basic press materials, and so it took a while to even get those. So it was kind of funny, but they're interested. So
awesome. All right, well, that's that for the discussions pre-review. So now it's time to get into the real thing. It's like my mom always said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the furnace.
That's the movie we're reviewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Out of the Furnace, the newest film by Scott Cooper, written by Scott Cooper and Brad Inglesby. This movie stars Christian Bale, Zoe Saldana, Casey Affleck, Willem Dafoe, and Woody Harrelson. And it is, I guess at its most basic level, it's the story of an older brother who goes looking for his younger brother after he goes missing. A lot more than that happening in this film. It is out in theaters now. Here's the trailer.
You want another?
No, Rodney was supposed to meet me here half hour ago.
Now, why the hell you want to fight?
I just need the money.
You're going to be a good boy and take a dive. I'm not going to have to teach you a lesson.
Rodney!
They haven't been able to find your brother.
the people up in those hills, at their own breed of justice, and it does not include us.
Mr. Groat is the worst. He haunts those mountains.
Wow, that was a good trailer.
Yeah, well done.
It was pretty fantastic.
Good job, Scott.
I love the part where it cuts to black for a moment. I don't know. I haven't seen this trailer in like ages. So out of the furnace, the story of a brother who works in a steel mill and a brother who is in the army, the way that their lives change over the years, and what happens when the younger brother who is in the army goes missing. This movie is filmed on location in Braddock, Pennsylvania, which has gotten kind of like it's a big moment in the sun recently, not for good reasons. It was the backdrop of some of the movie The Road, which you may remember is the most bleak, desolate, and depressing movie of all time. And it was also part of the Levi's ad, Go Forth. And, yeah, this place is basically famous for looking like your conception of a Rust Belt town that's gone to hell and the best days of America have gone past. To that end, it serves great in the film. It's a wonderful backdrop for the story we're being told. But how is that story? Jordan Raup, what did you think of Out of the Furnace?
Yes, Out of the Furnace. I was pretty excited for this movie, maybe more so a few months ago. It kind of seems to get getting lost in the shuffle a little bit. But as you know, Scott Cooper directed Crazy Heart, which I wasn't crazy about. No, it was fine. It was any movie where it's kind of like a performance showcase and fails to really deliver anything directorially interesting. I kind of watch it, then I'm kind of done with it. And that was definitely that movie. Like, it was fine. Jeff Bridges was fine. But anyway, so he did get an Oscar. Look at that. Good job.
That's just a fact. You can't dispute
that. It is. Yeah. And anyways, and so yeah, coming back with kind of a more interesting story, it seemed like on the surface, with a, you know, an ensemble, it seemed like he was stepping up his game. And, I think I was entertained by this movie as much as you could be considering how bleak it is. But I think there's some real, a lot of problems with it. And, I would say overall I'm pretty mixed. And, it's kind of interesting reading that, you know, you just said like the plot line, but how different the movie is from just that log line.
Oh yeah. The movie's very different from both the log line and the trailers.
Yeah. So, and I don't even know if I really like that, you know, not that I was caught off guard, just that I didn't think that especially the last act of this movie was very interesting at all. So anyways, yeah.
Oh, Danny, what about yourself?
I'm pretty curious about Brian, but we'll see that later, I guess. Cause I saw this with Jordan. So, we sort of talked about it a bit, and then I have a review on the site. But yeah, to sum up, I was also looking forward to this film. And some of the comparisons that were being made when the film premiered were pretty interesting, especially in relation to films like The Deer Hunter. That one popped up in a few reviews. And kind of like right from the opening shot, Cooper sort of establishes himself as kind of a pretty determined presence behind the camera, which already kind of distinguished it for me from Crazy Heart. So I kind of wanted to like this movie. And like Jordan said, with how kind of resistant the narrative is to kind of being summarized or being marketed, like you kind of, this is kind of a movie you want to like support. Like, it's not like it's being made for anyone. Like, I think I said this about Old Boy. Like, I don't know who would watch this movie like for fun. It's kind of like really depressing. But I was very mixed on the film. And I think the biggest problem for me was like the Woody Harrelson character, that I thought was just like a really misjudged character of kind of like hillbilly, meth addict villainy, because there are things in the film that I think were really genuine and affecting, like the sort of main conflict between the two brothers, you know, is like Christian Bale's character is this responsible guy and he has a longtime girlfriend and he's working in the mills like his father who is sick, and then Casey Affleck is this sort of scarred war veteran who has no interest in a steady job and can't really do that lifestyle. And they have like a really intense argument about that in one good scene. And when I was watching that scene, I was just like, this is what the movie is about. And like, this is good. And then it cuts to Woody Harrelson, like, sexually assaulting a woman with a hot dog. And I'm like, all right, this probably doesn't need to be in the movie. And I'm just like, why is Cooper so interested in creating this really elaborate villain when kind of the soul of the movie is elsewhere? And as the movie went along, like, that problem remained for me. And like, you get these things like bare knuckle brawls, and I just like, is really off-putting. But, you know, obviously, like, this is a very good cast, and each of them kind of have their moments. But like Jordan, I am a little mixed on the Furnace film.
Okay. Because I straight up loved this movie.
Oh, wow. I had a feeling somehow. I don't know why.
You just know me so well. Yeah, I don't even know why or when it happened. But when I got home from seeing the film last night, my roommate asked what I thought of it. And yeah, without even really thinking about it, I was like, I think I loved it. So it must be true. And the more I've thought about it, and I have thought about it a lot since then, I don't know, there's just a lot to appreciate in this movie. I mean, first of all, the acting is incredible. That scene that you mentioned, Danny, the argument between Christian Bale and Casey Affleck is incredible. And it's a type of scene that you can only get out of those two actors. And just in general, the way that the movie focuses on this concept of the forces that enact upon you that you can't control, and the way that they shape your life beyond your ability to control or to deal with. I don't know, there was something I really liked about that. And I liked the way that the movie took its time to establish relationships before getting into the logline story. And just the scope of it, I don't know. It's bizarre, because as I was watching it, I could already see the problems that other people would have with it. But none of them were really affecting me. And
I did like the kind of time jump and the structure, at least in the first act, I will say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it does spend a lot of time in the first act setting up what basically is the prologue. No spoilers. So
it is crazy how early on the movie shifts though from what you think. So it is hard to not spoil it.
Yeah. So in the way that I look at spoilers is anything that you couldn't get from like a trailer.
Right.
Should be elided over. So we'll talk more about the structure of the story and everything in the spoiler section. But yeah, I just like it was really affecting and it's not like most movies that travel along the same storyline where, you know, the police are incompetent and this person's gonna like go out and do their best to avenge their brother or find their brother or mother or sister, whoever's in trouble. And in this movie, like, it really is, you can see the strain on this person who wants to just be able to step back and let the world take its time and figure things out, but who just, through the mixture of everything that's happened in his life and his brother's life, just can't allow himself to do that anymore. And there was something really affecting about that, and about the way that all the characters interacted. And all of the little interpersonal things that these people have gone through that makes their actions more believable and more real. And yeah, Woody Harrelson's a little crazy in this movie, but I guess, you know, a methed out hillbilly is never going to be the most nuanced character.
Oh, I mean, I think he did what was asked of him, for sure.
And I think it's one of those things, like, a lot of this movie is people who care about things or who have a morality or a scruples, and that is one of the action or one of the forces that's enacting upon them. And he is like that classic allegorical villain who's just kind of a weird force of nature. And I mean, he does really well in the role. It is a little off-putting at sometimes. I mean, like, literally the first scene of this movie is him sexually assaulting someone with a hot dog.
Yeah.
But it quickly goes from that kind of, 'cause I liked that scene because it went from that cartoonish kind of weird, like, evil, then it segues into him just being a straight-up monster. Like, normal, old-school. Like, this guy isn't just a little crazy. He's actually very dangerous.
A lollipop-sucking monster.
Yeah, a lollipop-sucking monster. I'm going to start calling people that. The one thing is, and I guess, like, this is just one of those things, like, I don't know a lot about life out in the Appalachians. I don't know a lot about, you know, Rust Belt towns that are depressed and falling apart and there's nothing to do but, you know, get drunk and make trouble, I guess. But, I mean, like, is bare knuckle boxing, like, a thing? Like, do people actually do this?
I don't know. I actually have some family not too far from that location and I've never seen them bare knuckle box. But I'm not always around, so.
Yeah, you know, they're like, uh-oh, the city boy's coming back. Because here, like, and for a second I was like, this seems like pretty stereotypical, like, rich person's assumptions about, like, rural America. Like, what do these hillbillies do when they're not, like, you know, working in the steel mill or out at war? Oh, they're bare knuckle boxing. But then I remembered that Rust and Bone had the same basic thing. So I don't know if, like, bare knuckle boxing's just making a comeback.
I knew there was a recent movie I'd seen that also had that, but I couldn't think of it till now.
Because I was watching it and I was like, "Oh, this is just like Rust and Bone." I think Rust and Bone. I mean, they're very different movies, so I can't really say which had better bare knuckle boxing. I think in this one it's a little more intimate and immediate, and in Rust and Bone it's a little more operatic and affecting. But I mean, like, and then not only that, but I mean.
And wasn't it in Rust and Bone? Most of it was from Marika Tilliard's like point of view, right? Like,
yeah. She was out in the. She was out seeing it. What was the other one? The Guy Ritchie one, Snatch.
Yeah.
Snatch.
Oh yeah. Well, and actually, there's literally like, I don't know. That's because it's not really a spoiler, but there's the crux of Snatch is the same. The climax is the same as this one.
Yeah.
In terms of Brad Pitt's character having to do something.
Yes. And I mean, I guess. One of the things that I've gotten most from the movie is now I really just want to know if there's a bare knuckle boxing thing happening. Because that really does seem like it would speak to something in our culture.
Yeah. You'll never know unless you pull a Christian Bale and go in the underground.
I was about to say, I've got to go undercover.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to toughen up first because I'm not going to say I'm weak, but I definitely couldn't take more than two punches to the face.
Yeah.
And it's always weird because it always seems like, in the context of the films at least, there's a lot of money to be made at these things. But the people in the ring and the people on the outskirts of the ring actually watching never look like they're that affluent.
Yeah, and the odd thing is, wasn't half of the bare knuckle boxing was taking place in New Jersey, right? Where Marlon DeGroat was, which is not... I guess we could find out, Danny, if we took a road trip. That's not too far from us.
Yeah, I'll meet you there.
All right.
I have a thing first, but...
Well, it was in Ramapoke, I think. So just go there, chill out in Ramapoke for a while, see if you can buy some crystal,
at a gas
and ask where the boxing matches.
Exactly.
we've spent a lot of time on this one specific thing, but it is just one of those things where it's like, if I don't believe that that's something that occurs in the world, it would be really hard for me to accept the movie, because so much of it hinges on this kind of desperation game that these people are playing. But luckily for the movie, I did, because I was able to just remember all the other times I've seen it in film. Because I literally have no context for it in the real world. But it works, and I really like this movie, and I liked the places it goes, and I liked the twists and the turns that it took. So,
Just one thing I remember from the boxing scenes, and like, I didn't have a problem believing that culture just because it was so like... intense in the movie, like you can't really just like ignore it, but there was some dialogue I think in the first fight that was like really annoying to me. I think like the guy Casey Affleck is fighting, he sort of like beats up on him a little bit, and then he's like, come on white boy, like fight back. And then I think he has a line where he's like, because Affleck's wearing army pants, he's like, yo, this isn't like Iraq, man, like fight me. And I was just like, I don't know if I need that like dialogue. It seemed like it was like there's this tendency in the film to just like make the characters utterly miserable. like in every moment.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're in a bare knuckle boxing match. What do you say in a bare knuckle boxing?
I'd just be punching the guy. I wouldn't really be spouting dialogue or something.
I feel like shit talking among boxers is a well known thing.
All right, enough bare knuckle boxing.
Yeah,
I think we're good.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Someone needs to make a documentary about this. One of the other things that I liked about this movie is the inherent humanity of all the characters, except for Woody Harrelson's character. He's just a monster. But, I mean, it's so difficult to talk about without getting into spoilers. Whenever something happens to someone, they always react in a way that is very much a personal way, and never coming really from a place of malice. There are numerous examples, particularly with the way that Christian Bale's relationships with certain characters change throughout the film, where in another movie he might be a real jerk about it, but in this film he has such grace and such acceptance and understanding, and there's a really heartbreaking scene on a bridge between him and Zoe Saldana that just, it really ripped my heart out. And I haven't seen this many emotionally affecting scenes in a film, especially a film like this. Because like Danny said, I mean, I don't know who this is made for. Like, this isn't the type of film they make anymore. It has a real throwback vibe to it.
And it's getting like a wide release.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's strange.
Crazy. And I just don't know where it's coming from or who it's going for. But like, I loved it. And sitting there and letting it wash over me like that, and letting me realize how much of a character study and a mood piece on top of being like a social statement and an actual, like, you know, crime story. I don't know. It worked on me.
I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy that it was made. You know what I mean? It feels like very much like a kind of like revenge genre movie, but with these added.
But the genre aspects take up so little of it. You know what I'm saying? I would say it's literally like the last third of the movie where this logline story even comes in.
I guess I kind of consider like all the Harrelson stuff, like genre stuff I could have done without, honestly. Not that I'm opposed to like genre, but when a lot of the other drama in the movie, like that scene with Zoe Saldana, felt so sincere, like I didn't really need the meth crack den stuff.
We have to talk about that.
Yeah, and like one other thing is like I feel like part of the reason that subplot is in there is to like sort of just raise the stakes and make this a kind of intense like life or death kind of movie. But basically just like looking at this town, like right away you're basically like, okay, these characters could probably like die soon just like for some reason because it's like so bleak. And Casey Affleck's like already getting the crap beat out of him in these fights, and like Christian Bale might lose his job soon, and like the dad's dying. So I feel like enough bad stuff is happening that you don't need like Harlan DeGroat.
But I disagree, because I kind of like how that works. Like I can see a movie that would just take place in Braddock and be about, you know, all these people whose lives are falling apart. But I like the kind of allegorical interjection of Harlan DeGroat and the way that it kind of crystallizes what would otherwise just be a meandering sad sack tale. I mean, like, there is a movie where he doesn't exist, and we just get to watch Christian Bale suffer and Casey Affleck get the shit pounded out of him. And I don't think I'd like that as much, because you need that. And the thing that I liked most about the movie is the way that it brings it to this climax where you see the extent to which all of these outside forces will make someone go to a certain breaking point. And so it adds a punctuation mark onto a movie that would otherwise be an ellipsis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if Harlan DeGroat had been in Blue is the Warmest Color... Like, I think that I would have liked that movie.
Yeah. Now you're convincing me.
Because Blue is the Warmest Color is the kind of movie where it ends in an ellipsis. Like, and that's fine. It was a fine film. But this one, it actually puts a stamp on its story, makes its statement, and it has a definitive ending point.
See, I'm more of an ellipsis guy, so...
I mean, I can get behind the ellipsis sometimes, but I wouldn't want it in this film.
Yeah.
Like, do I believe that Harlan DeGroat should have been in Blue is the Warmest Color? Yeah. Absolutely. Wait, that's just ruined my own point.
That's the takeaway.
Yep. I see your point.
You could have done
Blue is the Warmest Color any other way. You could have done this one any other way, but I think they made the right choice.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Excellent.
Can't agree, but let's go on.
Woo! Okay, so let's get into spoilers.
Finally.
Jesus, Jordan. So spoilers for Out of the Furnace. Yeah, let's talk about it. So...
Yeah, so in the final scene, everyone dies in a furnace.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Pretty brutal.
Ironically enough, no one can get out of the furnace.
And then the title card shows up, and you're just like, Cooper, what are you doing?
So the way that this movie is structured is, we go through, and I wasn't looking at my watch, so I'll just make a random guess. We go through about 15 to 20 minutes of story that is, you know, set up. It's, you know, it's Harlan DeGroat beating the shit out of a guy at a drive-in movie. And then it's Christian Bale's character, Russell, working at the steel mill and meeting his brother, Rodney, played by Casey Affleck, at a betting parlor, meeting his dad, who's dying and convalescing in their home. And his girlfriend, played by Zoe Saldana.
It was good. She was one of the strong points.
And, it all comes to a head when Christian Bale, driving home a little tipsy, after paying off a local bookie to try to help out his brother, he's driving home a little tipsy, goes to adjust the radio, doesn't see a car pulling out, hits the car, killing both occupants, one of whom is a young child, and goes to jail. Meanwhile, his brother's been stop-lost and is going back to Iraq for another tour. And then there's a time jump to him getting out of jail, his brother's finally out of the military. What did we think about that? Because that's not something that was really pushed in the marketing, and I think that it's a really big thing that happens that was not really alluded to at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's like kind of the crux of why, you know, like the what I was gonna say right before this was you said it ties into this.
Okay,
you said at the beginning like it's kind of these outside forces that are having these characters choose, you know, like. You know, have to choose certain things that they might not do otherwise. That you were talking in reference to like their locale and situation, because with Christian Bale's character, like he clearly messed up himself. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
messed his own life up.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, I just wanted to clarify that before. Yeah.
No, I'm and, not saying that his drunk driving was an outside force he couldn't control.
Yeah.
I'm saying that like his relationship with his brother led him to that place. Which he otherwise wouldn't have been at. And, like, the place they're living has led to them being in an economic state that is, yeah.
Okay, cool. That's what I was saying earlier with in the structure. I really liked how clearly Cooper had, like, a vision for this. I don't know if it was clearly portrayed throughout the rest of the movie, but I liked how it kind of had that time jump and it kind of even with the performance they did a good job, I think, like actually making that believable.
Yeah, and I guess one of my things when I was watching it was just like I was surprised that it took out, like it seemed to be going on a path, and in a movie often the path will never be disrupted by anything major, and sending one of your characters to jail is definitely something major. And completely shifting the paradigm of the life that we assume that he has is pretty major. And I thought it was a bold choice that I actually really liked. And that really paid off, especially when he goes home and his father has died. And his girlfriend has moved on with the local sheriff. And that scene on the bridge when she tells him that she's pregnant. And he's, you know, trying to say that he's happy for her. That was a small film in and of itself.
Well, that's what when I was watching the movie, I was thinking like when he was in jail and then like right before he got out, I was like, this literally could have been its own film.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, no, that scene is great. Zoe Saldana, really surprising. Actually, I haven't really seen, can't think of a movie where she's actually been
called upon to like give that level of, yeah. Cause I mean, don't get me wrong. She's great in the movies she's been in.
Yeah.
But this is the first one that really asked her to tap, like, a reservoir of emotion. And she equips herself well. The other big twist from what the marketing would have you suggest is that there is no ambiguity regarding Casey yeah. Affleck.
Where is he?
Yeah, like in the movie, it's like, oh, he's got my brother. I need to save him. And in this film, it's like, no. Yeah. Casey Affleck is murdered almost immediately after finally taking a dive. Like, the real gut punch in this part of the film is Casey Affleck was supposed to take a dive earlier in the movie, and he couldn't control himself enough to do it. He ended up, like, pummeling his opponent. And finally, he buckles down, and he takes the dive. And it's the nonsensical actions of Willem Dafoe's John Petty character that gets him killed. What a pain in the ass that is.
Dafoe.
I was on the edge of my seat during that boxing match, and like when he takes the fall and gets just crushed, yeah, I was like, thank God. I was like, that's rough and it's awful, but you know what? He did it, and I've seen the trailers. I know what's going to happen, but I was still so happy for him. And then that freaking Harlan DeGroat.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah, that was pretty shocking.
And then like I was just like, there's got to be a way that like he's gonna do something or say something that's. But then of course, you think about it, like why on earth would this guy ever hold anyone hostage or keep them alive? He's a maniac, and the way that leads to Christian Bale's like haltering attempts to find him and leaving it to the police, and then just suddenly realizing that you know it wasn't gonna get done.
Well, I think even the crazier part of that is that Christian Bale knows he dies pretty early on.
Yeah, like it he finds out. Like, there's a point where it's like Hunter's dog found him. Blah blah blah.
I didn't like Forest Whitaker too much in this movie.
That was my I will say my one bone of contention is I don't know what exactly Forest Whitaker was doing. But when he says,
at first I honestly thought like he was her dad or something. Zoe Saldana's dad. Is that weird?
A little bit, yeah.
Because like he like dropped her off for work. I thought she was like kind of, I thought like her life was in shambles after he left, and he was and she was kind of like went back home or something. And then so it kind of caught me off guard. I don't know why, because he kind of seems like he's like 30 years older than he is in this movie. Am I wrong?
He looks pretty weathered.
He looks weathered. Yeah, he looks pretty.
So I was like, oh yeah, rough. That's nice. She's living back with the family, trying to get it together. It's like nope,
not what's happening. Yeah, no, Forrest Whitaker is making some weird choices, and he's got an accent on that I guess just because I know what Forrest Whitaker is supposed to sound like didn't really work for me. And when he delivers the news that Rodney has died, it just felt really blunt, like really rough. Like maybe the guy just doesn't have any social skills.
Right.
But good Lord, man.
Like showing up at his day job just
yeah.
before he goes to work.
He's like, dead.
Yeah. I will say that Christian Bale pretty much nailed that accent, because like I said, I have some family there. And
what can't Christian Bale do?
Yeah, he's actually, this is a spoiler, but he is the best part of American Hustle.
Okay,
so get excited for that.
I would have guessed that. You know, just
even though people will say it's going to be Amy Adams and
Jennifer Lawrence
because they're much more flashy performances, but no, it's Christian Bale.
That's because they got something to flash. Am I right, guys?
Yeah, and it is crazy how wildly different both of these performances are. But
well, I mean, he's one of those guys who he can be in like 14 movies in a year, and you'll never see the same notes from him.
Mm.
And I don't know why, but I like depressed Christian Bale. He's a good guy.
One thing I liked about the acting, and this could be a result, like Scott Cooper, he's like a trained actor. And there were some moments like this in Crazy Heart 2 where it's almost like he just kind of lets the actor like do whatever they want for like a moment. And like I think in my review I described it as like there are a few moments where it seems like Bale is almost like discovering the performance in the middle of a take. So like that scene where he gets out of prison, yes. Like it's a really long shot, and like he's barely even doing anything. Like he's just kind of like walking, and then he like hugs his brother, and then he like slams the car a few times.
He takes
and
like just, really deep breaths.
Yeah, and it's just like completely aimless activity, but there's like a real sense of like discovery to the performance. And even in like the bridge scene with Zoe Saldana, like after she drops the news, there's like a really long pause and you can like see Bale like shifting the character. And like, it's almost like Cooper wants you to see like all these things the actor is doing. And I thought that was like those moments were really like my favorite in the film. Cause yeah. like,
I, this movie was so bleak. I thought for sure that he, when he's like, yeah, let me drive, and he was going to like hit someone again.
God,
yeah.
He thought it was going to happen again. One of the yeah. things I actually liked about, I guess both the writing, directing, and the acting in this movie is, I mean, he kills two people in a car accident. That is pretty much 100% his fault. And I think that the acting and the way that everything is structured and situated, I mean, he's obviously, we don't feel bad that he's going to jail. Like, obviously that's what needs to happen. But
well, I thought it was kind of interesting the way the actual accident happened. Like, it wasn't, he was like swerving all over the road. It was like,
no, it was just,
this lady that, pulled out and then
it's
was
that,
like, oh,
it's
shit.
It's that
like,
one half second of delayed reaction time that, you know, drinking or something like that will give
right,
you.
Right, exactly. I think a lesser movie would have had him like really amp up like,
like, I'm going 95, and I'm driving on the whole road. No, exactly. Like, it really was like the, if that person hadn't pulled out, he would have gotten home fine, and no one would have been hurt. But that one half second that you lose because you're a little tipsy, and he wasn't even, like, fall down drunk. Right. He was probably just over the limit, because he had, like, what, one beer and then a glass of whiskey that he was made to take by the John Petty character.
Defoe,
that motherfucker. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just weird because like usually in a movie like this, they could be like, oh, he's going to jail for something he didn't do, or he's a monster and he has to build himself back up. But in this, it's just like, he's just a decent guy who made a terrible mistake. And it's very rare that a movie will let that be what it is, where you just have to accept the flaw in this character and move beyond it if you can. So there's a lot of like nuanced things like that that I really, really enjoyed about the film. And then there's Harlan DeGroat. Not so nuanced.
Can we talk about one scene in this movie that could have been excised entirely?
I think I know.
Dan and I talked about this after. Brian, if you can give me a reason why this scene was in the movie, I will do something for you. No.
Sweet.
I will. Yeah, no. So the scene where it's like the fake out where he's in his... You think he's in this crack house or whatever, and yeah. And like the SWAT come, or whoever it is, the police come, and then he's not there.
Yeah,
like what? I did not understand any narrative implications of that scene. Like,
well,
that,
for me,
yes, for you.
The reason that scene exists is to be a fake out. There's definitely a fake out element to
it. But why? Like why? Like the
why the only, fake out
before,
or why the
before
scene
you say
at all?
That, because I wanted to say the only reason I could think would be to let the movie know that like yes, the police are coming after him, and it's even more bleak that they probably would have got to him before Christian Bale did. Eventually,
I think the part of it is like yeah, there's a point right after that scene where he's on the phone and he's getting the news that they went to the house but they didn't get him. And he says something to the effect of, like, the guy, like, they keep going after this guy, and this guy just is so wily and, you know, he's never where they think he's going to be. And he, like, destroys his phone. And I think that you need to see that the act, like, it's not like the, like, one police officer shows up and the guy just, like, doesn't answer the door and he's like, well, he's not home. Like, there's a concerted effort going on to capture this guy. And the frustration that Christian Bale feels is not out of place, because it really does appear as though all the best efforts of everyone else aren't doing anything.
I guess. I just feel like they either should have not had that scene, or they should have had an additional scene where, because Forrest Whitaker, who gets the short end of the stick in this movie, not that he's that great, but like that they had a scene where he, you know, it was actually him that was kind of organizing, you know, he was actually trying. And we could have had some empathy for that character, but instead, it just felt so out of place to me. I was so mad.
I think the fake out element of it was out of place.
Yeah.
I feel like you could have had that scene with just the SWAT people and not Harlan shooting up meth into his foot.
Yeah,
that's the drug.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's getting
like,
high.
I do like the fact that like right after they've said like he's not here, he like does his crazy little tweaked out dance and then just walks outside. Because it does give you this conception of him again as that like allegorical force of evil.
Yeah, we got that from the first scene though, so I don't know.
I don't know. It was such a brief scene, and I kind of liked how it was directed to the point where I was able to look beyond that. I do want to talk about now the final climactic scene of the film, where Christian Bale hunts down Harlan, and they have a brief fight. Christian Bale shoots him in the leg, and makes him walk, and then shoots him in the side, and then makes him walk some more. What did we think was being said in that scene? And he keeps saying, like, you know, do you know who I am? And then he finally says, I'm Russell Baze's, or I'm Rodney Baze's brother.
Certainly some revenge.
Thank you, Danny.
Harlan is responsible for the death of Casey Affleck's character.
God damn it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, just reading some interviews with the director, because I kind of, there's also a shot after that, which...
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But I guess, like, many different endings were shot, and they kind of went with this one at the last minute, which is kind of interesting. The ending shot.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it's like, I kind of liked how, like, it was kind of an inevitability that he would be forced with this decision and choose to do this. Yeah. Like I believe that his character would do this, which is kind of, like, the whole movie, you know, I don't know, from, like, the moment that he found out about Casey Affleck going missing, like, you could just tell there was fire in his eyes from the furnace.
Yeah.
It felt natural to me that he would do that, whereas I think, I don't know if everyone would agree with that.
Yeah, Danny, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, like, my only problem with the ending is, like, I don't have any problem, like, ending with the revenge gesture, but, like, the whole logic of the final sequence felt really contrived because, like, first of all, Christian Bale, like, sets up this meeting in the bar where Harlan, like, he's supposed to meet him or whatever to, like, get money, but then the bartender's there, and Bale kind of, like, waits a while before going inside.
When he was running around outside, I just, like, started laughing, kind of. Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed very funny.
Like, wasn't sure why he was, like, being so patient. And then, of course, like, by the time he gets inside, the bartender's injured and Harlan, like, escapes. And then he runs through a field and, like, all of a sudden they're in this, like, mill or whatever, kind of like a textbook, like, film climax location. Like, yeah. It sort of, like, rolled my eyes a little bit, like, oh, 20 seconds later, they're in, like, this mill with all these obstacles.
They're in the furnace. They're going back to the furnace.
Yeah.
it's the boss.
And then, like, he shoots him in the leg once and, like, lets him walk for, like, a couple minutes before killing him. And, like, it just felt a little bit, I don't know, like, I don't know if overthought is the right word, but it just, like, took too long and there were, like, too many steps.
See, I didn't feel that way. Earlier in the movie, Christian Bale and his uncle, they go out and they hunt a deer, and they talk about the clean kill, and if you don't do that, you have to track the deer until it dies. And I think it's pretty obvious that Russell Baze does not want this to be a clean kill.
Mm-hmm.
And that this forced march that he puts this man on, despite all the shots, because he shoots him once in the leg and then once in the side, and he forces him on. And I think it's all kind of like a means of punishment. And he's not going to let this guy go to jail, because he went to jail, and he knows that you either get out or it's just not. He doesn't want the person who murdered his brother to do the same penance that he did for accidentally murdering two people. And they have that moment where he says, you know, I'm Rodney Baze's brother, and Harlan remembers him, and he actually has nice things to say about the guy. And then he lets him go, and then the cops show up, and then Russell shoots him in the head. And I liked that. I liked that he was unwilling to allow something to occur that was inside of his power to change. Like, it was his agency, and he affected his agency. And as we see in that last shot, you know, it cuts to black, and then it fades in very slowly to him sitting at his kitchen counter, or kitchen table. Living room? Dining room? Doesn't matter.
Furnace.
He's sitting at a...
His own personal
furnace table. So he's sitting at the table, there's a pile of mail in front of him, and he's just sitting there. calm, cool, collected. And I guess what we're supposed to understand from that is that in spite of what he did, he got away with it.
Also,
he got some mail.
Well, yeah, no. The director said that he, I don't think this came across, but he was kind of living in a house where everyone he loves has died. Like, so.
Oh, no. I mean, it was definitely his dad's house. And I could definitely tell that it was, you know, he cleaned it up a little bit earlier in the movie, and it seemed to be just more clean than it had been previously as well. Like, the inside of that house always kind of had the sheen of, like, having been lived in. But yeah, I mean, like, it's funny, though, because he got away with it. He's not sitting at a prison, but he's still sitting in a place that he can't get out of.
Right, his own prison. Personal prison. Symbolic. Furnace. That's, yeah.
Furnace, which will enact upon him stresses, energies, which will transform him. Any final thoughts on this movie before we move on?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend seeing it in theaters, especially now in the busy time of the year where some other stuff should be seen. But
not now the Desolation of Smaug is coming out.
Smaug. yeah. But you know, it's fine. Like it's a fine movie. I wouldn't really say it's a must see.
All right, Danny, final thoughts?
Interesting work of cinema. Quite the film.
Watch Midnight Meat Train.
Yeah, I kind of want to see that.
Wait, have you seen it?
That's the movie in like the opening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what?
Which was also in Silver Linings Playbook last year. What?
It was. And Bradley Cooper's in that
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
So that made it even weirder.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk about what's coming out. Oh, actually, before we do that, I think the movie's fantastic. And I think people should see it. I don't think everyone should see it, because honestly, I don't think a lot of people will like it. But I liked it. So if you think you're like me, you should go check this movie out. Let's talk about the films that are coming to DVD and Blu-ray.
Let's do it.
We got a Blu-ray we have a Blu-ray re-release of Mary Poppins. We also have the Blu-ray release of Fast 6. Or Furious 6, or Fast and Furious 6. We talked last week about Paul Walker, and apparently some of the proceeds of the sales of Fast and Furious 6 will be going to charity. So on top of it being a really fucking ridiculously fun movie, buying it will also be doing some good in the world. So I'd definitely say check that out.
There's also a bonus scene that they couldn't delete in time. Of our characters from Fast, it's a scene from Fast 7 our characters go to a funeral, including Paul Walker. So that's kind of crazy.
But. Yeah, that is pretty crazy. Jeez.
Sorry to end that.
That just kind of ground us to a halt.
I have the best recommendation of the week, which is a really happy movie.
Is it?
Oh wow.
Me too.
No, it's called The Hunt.
The Hunt.
Yes.
Okay.
It is probably going to be my top 10 movies of the year. And it's an uplifting story of a guy who gets the pedophilia. So, no, I'm just kidding. it's Thomas Vinterberg, who did Festen, a.k.a. Celebration.
Yeah.
And he's made a few like notable movies, but this is definitely like his best since then.
Is this another Dogma one?
No, it's not. Yeah, have you really? You've never heard of this movie, Brian?
Oh, I've heard of it. I just never really saw it or learned a lot about it.
It got like a really small release only in theaters this summer. Anyways, but it premiered at Cannes a year ago, where Mads Mikkelsen won the Best Actor, and it's totally deserved. I think he gives one of the best performances of the year, and I just love this movie, especially like all the way up to the last shot and what it says about.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so just go seek it out. It's really good.
All right.
Well, but it's I lied before, it's not uplifting. So
okay. So yeah. if that's what you were looking for, it don't do it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna definitely recommend Fast 6, Furious 6, Fast and Furious 6.
It's if you want the official, it is the official title is Fast and Furious 6, but in the film,
but the title
they
card
say
is Furious 6.
Yeah.
Weird. So. Danny, do you have a specific movie you want to call out for recommendation?
I know that one I haven't seen that I'm kind of curious about is Jane Mansfield's Car, which is directed by Billy Bob Thornton. And I think that like barely got a release a couple months ago, and it's already out on Blu-ray. So clearly the film did really well. But like I heard a few good things, so like I don't know if I'll, you know, pay for a Blu-ray of it, but I would like to see it.
Yeah. I've had a screener of that forever, and I haven't watched it.
Oh yeah.
The other movie that's kind of notable is I didn't really like it too much, but Post Tenebris Lux, Tenebras Lux,
yeah, Post Tenebris Lux, Canada. Yeah,
it's Carlos Regatta's latest movie, and yeah, I wasn't a big fan. It's also on Netflix as of this week. But it's getting a Blu-ray release this week. And if you're doing your top of the year, I've seen it mentioned a few times, so maybe just for consideration. It's an interesting movie. It's like shot in 4:3, and it follows like all these different people. Like, Danny, have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw that in theaters. I was also mixed, but like I'm sure it's really great to look at on Blu-ray. The movie is like visually stunning.
Yeah.
Even though I was like mixed.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's coming out to theaters. Two options. The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug. That is the sequel, of course, to last year's The Hobbit. The long fucking journey.
An unexpected journey.
That's yeah, Brian, the one.
please pay respect.
I will try. Yes. Apparently this one's getting better notices. Yeah. Haven't seen it.
Isn't it? I was thinking about this. Isn't this funny? Like, okay, so Warner Brothers releases The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. But everyone sees it because they don't know it's terrible yet. And then no one was going to see this. I mean, that's not true. People were. But then, you know, it's a little better. And you're like, oh, maybe I should see this. It's like it's the perfect marketing campaign.
You set our expectations really low. And then when you surprise us, we'll go see it again.
Exactly.
My problem is I don't want to see it at all. As much as I love dragons, I fucking love dragons, and I don't want to go see a movie that literally has a dragon's name in the title, along with the word desolation. This should never have happened. But it's like 3 hours long, and then there's another one coming out next year.
Yeah, the length wouldn't be a deterrent if it wasn't for an unexpected journey.
Yeah,
I enjoy it.
Like, I went into an unexpected journey, and I was like, you know what? I dug the first three Lord of the Rings films. I can do 3 hours of this stuff again. I was wrong.
Yeah, it was rough. Hey, but I think did you see it in high frame rate?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of. I really don't want to see this movie, but I might do like a matinee, maybe like a few weeks down the line. Just in regular screening, because
I will see it in 2D because I gave high frame rate its shot, and I think that made the movie infinitely worse.
Yeah, I agree. And you will notice that Warner Brothers is not screening it for press in high frame rate. They learned their lesson.
Yeah. The other movie coming out is Tyler Perry's A Medea Christmas, which I'm really just hearing about for the first time, which is crazy because usually I see these things coming.
Really?
Yeah, like I at least see something. Like I on like usually there's a build up to the next Madea movie. I didn't realize this was happening.
Is there?
Yeah. There's like it's not a good build up. I'm not saying that people are earnestly looking forward to it, but
I see it, yeah.
Yeah. So those are the two choices.
Well, also limited release. Saving Mr. Banks, which I've our review will be coming, and it's not a positive one. So
oh, ouch.
And then American Hustle, which I talked about briefly, which is it's weird that David Russell would make a feature film that's just kind of an appetizer to Wolf of Wall Street, but and it's different studios, which is weird, but I guess, you know, they just wanted the preview for it, so
it's a nice plate of calamari.
Exactly. No, it really does feel like kind of like a pale imitation of a Scorsese movie, but it is entertaining. I actually got a lot of flack on Twitter for saying that it was a pale imitation, but entertaining. Someone couldn't believe that could be that those
the things both things coexist at the same time.
Yeah, that's so weird. Sorry, buddy, but
well, this is the calm before the storm because yeah, next week going wide, you have Anchorman 2, American Hustle, Say Mr. Banks goes wider. Then there's Walking with Dinosaurs,
and Inside Llewellyn Davis goes
wide. And it's the initial release of Her.
So yeah.
So despite wow, guys.
A lot of stuff happening.
Wait, is a Paul Walker film like actually being released?
Oh yeah, Hours is coming out as well next week.
Oh, I've never
which
heard of that.
We will have a review of on the site, I think. It's supposed to be decent. But. Right.
Excellent. Well, that's what's coming out, so look forward to all those. And let's talk about something we've seen randomly on our own that we think you should check out. So, Jordan Rapp, what's a random movie you saw that you'd like us to see?
Go to Danny first.
Danny, what's a random movie that you've seen on your own that you'd like us
go to see? Go to Nick.
Nick.
Wait, no, I can say it now. I forgot what I watched the last week. I'll do two. They're both 20. I've been kind of catching up on 2013 films. And so I watched a film called White Reindeer.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Which we have a review of on the site. Dan reviewed that. I would definitely agree with his review. This is not too many Christmas movies out this season, but this one just hit VOD in theaters. And it's a small scale, very, very small, modestly budgeted film about a woman who is like a real estate agent and living life in the suburbs with her husband. And they have plans to actually move to Hawaii because he got this like job upgrade or a promotion. And
also known as a promotion.
And but within like the first 10 minutes of the movie, their house gets broken into and he gets bludgeoned to death.
What?
Yeah. And the rest of the movie, it's like sent like an advent calendar, kind of like 24 days until Christmas, and it just shows her like slow decline. You realize like her husband has a lot of like dark secrets, and she gets very involved with those. So it's very. I watched this with my wife, which was a horrible.
Jesus,
like literally, like probably the worst decision I've made in the last probably 6 months. Because
I watched the whole thing.
I had no idea what it's about, but I knew like Joe Swanberg was in it briefly, and I was like, "Oh, his movies are not like always. I mean, they're somewhat weird." But we watched like Drinking Buddies.
And, did you like Drinking Buddies?
Yeah, I like Drinking Buddies. I mean, it's okay. It's not great. Yeah. So this movie though is very dark, a very, very dark comedy. So I was laughing and she was having none of it. So it wasn't. And we actually turned it off with 30 minutes to go, so I had to finish it later. So if you're by yourself, watch this movie. If it sounds up your alley. And then one more other recommendation, which actually I probably shouldn't talk about because you can't watch it anywhere right now, but. At Berkeley, which is the 4-hour Frederick Wiseman movie about UC Berkeley, California, the public school, one of the top rated public schools. And it's just his, you know, if you've ever seen a movie from him, which if you haven't, definitely seek out something like Salesman or High School or Titicut Follies, his first movie. He's just known for like going in these institutions and just capturing them with a great eye and very even keeled. It's just a great examination of where public schools are at now and lack of funding and how that affects everyone from the top down. It got a really limited release. It might be playing in like a few theaters across the country, but it's going to come out on like VOD and stuff probably like next year, I would guess. So it's 4 hours, but it'll probably play on like PBS too or something. So. Watch it when it comes out because it's great.
All right. Danny King, what about yourself?
I'm still working on this Coppola paper. So I watched an early film he made called Dementia 13, which isn't technically his like first directed feature, but I think it's generally considered like his first professional feature film. And it was made while he was sort of like apprenticing for Roger Corman. So it's like a really schlocky genre film, sort of like basically just like a really low budget Psycho. And it's only like 70 minutes and it's set in Ireland and it's like pretty fun, but like also pretty clearly like an early career work and like not the most interesting film, but like it's entertaining and it has some cool shots. I was watching the film hoping like I'd be able to write about it like significantly over like a couple pages, but like about 10 minutes into it I'm like, all right, this isn't gonna like breed much interest.
Setting the world on fire.
Yeah, this isn't setting the world on fire is what I thought. So
all right, well, my personal selection is a French film. I think we actually talked about this film last week, and it was in relation to how some people think that, like, movie with subtitles automatically equals, like, highbrow masterpiece. And this was the movie that I brought up that was like, you know, it might not be a highbrow masterpiece, but it's still really damn good. It's Brotherhood of the Wolf.
I've never seen that movie. Yeah. I've always wanted to. I know.
Oh my God. Guys, this movie's awesome.
This is Christopher Gaines, right? Or
Christoph Gonzer.
Christoph Gans, yeah.
I mean, I haven't really seen much else that he's done, which is to say I've only seen Silent Hill.
I was going to say, he made, yeah, that was Hollywood.
Yeah. Brotherhood of the Wolf was fantastic. Apparently, he's also got an adaptation of Beauty and the Beast coming out.
Yeah, the trailer came out this week, actually, which you can watch on the film stage.
Yeah.
And I did. And Vincent Cassell.
I mean, like, if you see the stuff that's happening in that trailer, and you're like, yeah, but I need more Wolf, Brotherhood of the Wolf. It's a beautiful movie. It's well-directed, interesting action scenes. It's one of those movies that's really, really style-focused, and the substance, when it comes up, is absolutely insane. But it's a fun time, and it's, you know, it's twisty and it's turny, and there's some really fantastic action scenes, and it's got a great use of color. And yeah, I would say that anyone who likes anyone who likes action, anyone who likes mystery, and anyone who likes a Frenchman and a Native American beating the shit out of people should see this film.
Sounds up everyone's
sounds
alley.
Good. Yeah,
right?
Sounds
that's
good.
Pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Beautiful women, frightening monsters. It's all there. Brotherhood of the Wolf. Available on DVD and Blu-ray, and I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but if it is, check it out. That's it. That's all I got. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Let's tell you where we can be found online. Jordan Rao.
You know.
Do you need me to go to Danny first?
No. You've been to the film stage, at the film stage, where I tweet a lot, and then at JP Ralph, where I tweet less often but more personal things. Very personal.
All right. Danny King.
Yeah. My Twitter account is the King Bulletin.
Excellent. And we can also find your review of Out of the Furnace on the film stage.
Yeah, it's a C, if you're wondering.
Oh, it's a C. Ooh, oh,
yeah. I would go C+, but
C+. Yeah, I definitely like put more thought into the grade than the writing. So
that's what you got to do. You got to please the people.
Oh my God. And I can be found online at filmstage, filmstage.com, also twitter.com/BrianJRowan, and my personal site, dearfilm.net. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Join us next week when we will hopefully not be talking about The Hobbit, but we may be talking about it anyway.
Smog.